Hey folks, welcome back to Math Teacher Lounge. My name is Dan Meyer.
And I'm Bethany Lockhart Johnson. Hello, happy new year. Hello, Dan Meyer.
H-N-Y, Bethany, H-N-Y to you and to all of the listeners out there in Math Teacher Lounge. H-N-Y is the abbreviation that I use sometimes.
Oh, is that what that is? Is that, I wasn't sure what that was. If on my birthday you send me HBD, no.
Yeah.
No, unacceptable.
I will. No, you want the whole thing. To demonstrate my care for your birthday, exactly. I got to spell the whole thing out. I'm just trying to stay relevant, you know, just trying to stay relevant and youthful. So I'm using the abbreves.
The brevies.
To the extent of even abbreviating the word abbreviation. So any New Year's resolutions you want to share with the listeners, Bethany? While you think, I'll just share mine real quick here. This is the year of the perfect Wordle streak for yours truly, Dan Meyer. I'm going the full 365. Watch me do it, folks. I'm naming it here live on air, recorded on air. Perfect Wordle year. What you got for the listeners, Bethany?
Let's see. It's raining very hard here in Southern California. And my New Year's resolution is to embrace nature. My child wants nothing more than to go and splash in all the puddles.
Nice.
And be amongst the mud. And what I'm going to keep telling myself, and so far I've been doing pretty good with this. Thrive, child. Splash. Squish. We can dry you off. You will not melt. So I want to keep finding opportunities. Like, for instance, my response is, it's pouring rain. Let's stay under covers and let's read this book together. And his response is like banging on the windows, like, please let me go outside. So I myself have some rain boots. I'm going to go forth and splash with my child. So that's hopefully you'll see me doing that a bit more.
Love that.
Ask me what I'm doing. I'm outside splashing in nature.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I have felt a bit like parenting as a means for rounding out aspects of my own personality that I have felt are habits or yes. Hobbies that are lacking. Like, I've never been real outdoorsy or into camping, but I don't want that to limit my own kids', yes. You know, aspirations or interests. So let's do the thing that's not supernatural for me for their own sake, which is kind of what I'm hearing a little bit from you, which sounds exciting.
Do you want to go camping together? Like our families?
Let's take this one off the air. I also love something that's more relevant to a teacher's audience that you said that I think is super interesting is how there's ways that we can make the jobs harder for ourselves that are optional. And like what I hear from you is like, I'm just like not going to freak out. Like we're getting wet. We're getting soggy. And I'm just like not going to freak out. And I just think that that's interesting to think about the things that we take on, you know, that's optional. Freaking out is optional sometimes, you know, and there's other areas, I think, for parenting or for teaching where it's like, oh, do I really need to choose this particular battle and to I don't know, reconsider that.
And in that spirit, our whole Wordle episode that we talked about, you know, do you remember you talked about how beautiful Wordle mistakes are? And like how you keep learning from mistakes. I mean, not like you obviously want the final correct answer, but just, you know, when you get on a losing streak, Dan, I hope you'll continue to pat yourself on the back.
I will not be taking on a losing streak or even lose one day is, you know, this is what's going to happen here. I'm just speaking that and putting
it
out to the universe.
Speak it.
But if it happens, I will be taking a long break from all human interaction and lamenting as I do.
Camping, Dan's off in the woods weeping.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Well, we want to share with you folks an exciting programming note is that we are currently working very hard on producing a special fifth season of this podcast. You thought the other seasons were special. Let me tell you, this fifth season gives new meaning to the word special. And we can't wait to tell you more about that. But in the meantime, Bethany, you want to tell them what we're up to in the meantime?
Well, Dan and I went back and we were having a conversation about some of our most favorite conversations or the conversations that people bring up to us. Like when we were at the CMC conference or NCTM, folks, when we talk about the podcast, they're like, oh, I loved this one. Oh, I love this one. And that to me, just like, I don't know, that is exciting. And so while we're putting together this new season, over these next few weeks, we're going to feature a few of our favorite conversations from our first four seasons, Dan. Four seasons.
We've been at this for four seasons. And I do want to just emphasize something you said, Bethany, that all of our conversations are our favorite conversations. They are all our special children. What we just felt like you, the listeners, did not quite learn enough from some of these. And so we really needed you to hear them again to make sure you got everything that you should get out of them. So let's tell them who's up first. And who's up first is our conversation we had about problem solving with Fawn Nguyen, who's an advanced math team specialist here at Amplify, been a former math coach, math teacher, just really done the work, is what I'd say about Fawn.
If you have been listening to this podcast, you're like, whoa, wait, I have not missed an episode. I didn't hear Fawn's interview. That is because we used to be video only, not podcast. So this conversation with Fawn was from, you know, what, our second season?
Yeah.
And we were on video. And another thing about it is it was like, this is a conversation that when folks talk about problem solving, a lot of the responses we've gotten are like, wait, I've never thought of problem solving this way. So in fact, you will hear us say that exact thing. So we really appreciated the time with Fawn. And yeah.
Enjoy it, folks. Especially enjoy Fawn's, I think, a four-part definition of problem solving, a word that's often kind of mushily defined, and Fawn really goes into, I think, precision and depth on it. So I hope you folks enjoy it.
Give a wave, Fawn, to the camera, would you? Cool. Fawn has been a teacher for a very long time. Like, she is someone who could have left the classroom at any point and taken any number of jobs in the math teaching universe. But I've always admired that Fawn has taught kids for a very long time. And that has given her, in my view, just a lot of clarity on what is important to her about students. I've seen like her not get upset or obsessed with certain kinds of small niche issues that a lot of us get a lot of us down in the classroom sometimes. And she's maintained a laser focus on, among many other things, problem solving as a virtue in mathematics classrooms. So please welcome Fawn to our show. Fawn, thanks so much for being here.
Hey, thank you so much. Thank you. I'm so excited and honored that you guys invited me for this, Bethany and Dan.
Thank you for being here.
Yeah. I love you, Bethany. Dan, I can tolerate, but I love you. And
I really worked myself up there on that complimentary opening for you, and that's how you get me back here. Okay. Problem solving is fully on the consciousness of math teachers. Every math teacher knows that they need to say like, yeah, oh, problem solving. Yes. Love it. Do it. I dig it. But even so, I feel like it's become kind of a buzzword. Like, it's not always obvious like what that means, or am I doing problem solving really? So we're curious, as someone who is a problem solving expert who is, you know, asked all over the world to like talk about problem solving, like, how do I know if I'm doing problem solving in my classroom?
This is not my definition of it, but nor am I an expert, by the way, Dan, thank you. But I tried really, really hard and to work on it. My definition, or it's not my definition, but I like it because it's short and honest, is problem solving is what we do when we don't know what to do. And so with that mind frame, I'm hoping teachers think more about what their task, because I think it gets mislabeled a lot as to what is problem solving. If the kids already know what to do, there's a solution path, then it's not problem solving.
Yeah. So what are examples then? Like an example of like, I might call something problem solving, but like it fails that particular definition you just proposed there. Very short, very honest definition.
It needs to have constraint and contradiction to what the kids think naturally. It should come as a surprise. There's an element of surprise in it. There's tension.
Maybe like if there's harder numbers or like, you know, decimals or fractions in the same kind of procedure. I can feel myself like thinking, yeah, this is hard. This is problem solving. Problem solving equals hard. But we already know what to do.
Or just word problems. That's the most common thing. As soon as it just has words attached to the math, it becomes a problem solving. But that's just coding it. To me, that's just coding it with words. Wrapping it around, it doesn't mean anything until we read through and see if it's, you know, there's true problem solving in it.
Like, what's the moment that it becomes problem solving in the way that you envision it?
I think, well, there's the bigger problem solving of really bringing in a task, I want to call it left field. It just, we rarely ever, if ever see it in the regular coursework, but it can also be problem solving if we just take what we expect the children to do at the end of the unit, how about we front load that? To me, that's also problem solving. So that, and I'm trying to encourage teachers to bring, do that last problem first. The task writers put more thought, not that they don't do the rest of it, but you know, this is a special one because they label it challenge or enrichment or are you ready for more? I've seen those. And so it's this really special problem. And I would love for us to think about do that first. Because my biggest fear is that because it comes at the end, that not all the children are involved. And so that to me is the saddest part is because we might not get to it, right? In mathematics, we always think, okay, well, let's do these problems and then we don't have time for the rest. But I think that's your richest task right there is at the very end. So why don't we front load it, start it? And it's okay if, of course, it's okay that we don't all get it, but the exposure to all students is so important. Talk about, equity, talk about that everybody gets the same thing. If everyone dug into that first one with everybody's collaboration and we get to share that, and then we leave it because now we learn more of the other stuff, right? That hopefully support, and then we can go back. And now everybody had a chance to go get into it. And then we can come back to it. As many problems, we need to go back to it.
And that feels so powerful because it feels like it's, as a teacher, I'm thinking it would also inform my work, how I approach the unit and how I approach the next steps, right? Like what kind of work would we be doing? Like if I allow it to change the way that I approach the unit.
Yeah, what you're describing is so powerful and really asks a lot of the task designers as well, I think. Like there are problem-solving tasks that like really require like abstract knowledge of the way formulas and variables fit together. And what I love about like what Amplify is doing with their problem-solving, what you're helping them do is that they start with a true low floor that like can draw in every student. And they might get stuck in different places. That's fine. But everyone has a way in. That's exciting.
It's a big deal for me to have this opportunity and this trust to integrate problem solving into the curriculum, make it intentional. It's difficult to implement. It is, to be honest, because for me, what is a good task? This makes one of my four criteria. One is it is non-routine. Simply stated, that's like your low floor, and then has multiple solutions. And the fourth, this makes it because that the teacher enjoys solving it. And so you have to enjoy solving it to bring it, because so that way I can say to my kids, this is my gift. It really is because, you know, I had so much fun and joy, and I appreciate the struggle. And I want to illustrate an example. For example, let's say Dan and I are classmates. And I know that Dan gets A's on his test. And the lowest score he ever got was an 89%. I, on the other hand, just sitting right next to him, I average D. I have a D average on everything. While Bethany, our amazing and wonderful teacher, brings in a problem. And when she brings it in, she says, I worked on this problem. I found this problem. I worked on it and I struggled with it. And it was amazing. I enjoyed it so much. I'm sharing it with you. And all of a sudden it's like, okay. And I'm sitting there, right? My teacher loves this problem so much. She's bringing it in to share with us. And now all of a sudden, and it's not, and I know she only gives us non-routine. When she talks about problem solving, it's non-routine. So it's not directly tied to the textbook that I've been struggling with. Okay, so this is, it gives me a chance. It gives me a chance to contribute, to think differently. And now suddenly I look forward to working with Dan, because in this space, in this problem solving space, Dan is no longer Mr. Know-it-all. And so and that's what I mean by I've been saying this for 100 times, and I will not stop saying it, which is problem solving levels the playing field. Our world is filled with unsolved problems. Are you kidding me? Right? We look around us. We have so many things that are not solvable, or people are working on it. And yet in mathematics, what happens? the bell rings, we start and we solve everything during that time and we leave. And that's, yeah, and no, I know we need to wrestle with problems.
And that was our conversation with Fawn Nguyen, which we first released way back in November 2021. You folks can follow Fawn on Twitter at Fawn P. Nguyen. That's at FawnPnguyen.
So our episode today is a double feature. We are featuring another conversation that we loved from season two. This is a conversation with Christy Herman Thompson and Kasia Omohundro Wiedekin. They're authors of the book Hands Down, Speak Out, Listening and Talking Across Literacy and Math. And I don't know if you remember, but not only did we have a conversation with them, but we did a whole book study on Facebook, a Facebook Live book study over the course of several months. And it was one of my most favorite things. And then they did a webinar at the end. So like our conversation with them on the podcast for me felt like such a, just a beautiful dive into their book. And, you know, I've said it before, like you think you have something down in the classroom. You're like, oh, hand raising? I've got that down. Mm-hmm. You think you have it down, but then somebody says, okay, but have you ever considered this? You know, and it just,
not that,
something totally different. And I loved talking with them. They're a lot of fun. And I loved the book.
Wonderful conversation. Great book. Very provocative ideas. Yeah. As someone who's like, okay, classroom management, I got to get the hand raising going in the classroom before we talk. They offered a really potent challenge to some really standard classroom management ideas. Yeah. Loved it.
And this conversation also offers some really practical tips for facilitating student conversations. So we think you'll enjoy it. Here's our conversation with Christy and Kasia. So today we are talking about Hands Down, Speak Out, Listening and Talking Across Literacy and Math K through 5. And we have the authors here, Kasia Omohundro Wiedekind and Christy Herman Thompson. Before we begin, let's define what a hands-down conversation is. A hands-down conversation is just another way to structure discourse in your classroom. So in a typical classroom, you might see students raising their hand and waiting on a teacher to call on them before they share their ideas or engage in discussion. But in a hands-down conversation, it's students' ideas and voices that are taking the lead, and teachers are stepping back and focusing on listening and facilitating. Hello, welcome to the lounge.
Thank you. We're excited to be here. We're fans of season one, so we're ready to go.
I was a secondary teacher, but I still found so much to love about the book. I think facilitating conversations is just generally challenging, and perhaps even more so in math, where answers feel so tightly dialed in lots of ways. But I loved it. I would love for you to just explain to our audience, like, what is a hands-down conversation, and how does that contrast with, like, what might be standard practice for some people, for some classes?
We started using the term hands-down conversation because we wanted to differentiate the fact that there are different times to have different types of dialogue in the math classroom, in the literacy classroom. And we use this as one of our tools, right? It's not like that every day, all day long, we're very against hand raising and should never see that again. We find that having this as one of our tools will be where we make really clear to the students that this is a moment where we're turning it over to you to negotiate the space and make the decisions about when your voice comes in and who speaks next. You know, carry on kind of like that dinner table or that playground or, you know, whatever is your natural habitat for talk, and bringing that into the classroom and then hoping that it also someday transfers back out of the classroom back into the real world.
For the teachers who feel like that's terrifying to have students just start speaking and speaking without any sort of control, or my little equity sticks, my little popsicle sticks, or my popcorn, or whatever other thing they're using, what would you say is the first step?
So I think like recognizing and naming that fear is part of it. And then saying to yourself, what's the worst that could happen here? You know, I think the worst that could happen is that nobody talks and it's totally silent. Or on the other hand, everybody talks at the same time. And both of those things will happen. And so what? It's going to be messy. And if you just acknowledge that it's going to look messy and that you know that that's part of growing, that every child as they learn and every adult is messy as they grow.
And we have to see what kinds of things will happen in a hands-down conversation. Like there's no prerequisite. You just start and then you see what happens. And those are the signs that tell you like, what can help this community grow as talkers and listeners? If everyone's talking at the same time and they're kind of pushing each other over with their words by saying, I have something to add or something like that. That's a common thing that sometimes happens at the beginning. Then you know that the next step is to do some work about how to hold your thoughts back, how to wait for a space in the conversation to talk. And those are all things we need people to know out in the world.
So can you give an example of a micro lesson that, well, first, what do you define as a micro lesson? And then what's an example of one that maybe somebody who wants to dip their toe into the world of hands-down conversations that they could try?
The reason we call them micro lessons is because we wanted to differentiate from the term mini lesson, which is out there and tends to describe about 10 or 15 minutes that might take place at the beginning of a work period time. And this is much smaller than that. We usually follow a pretty predictable structure of naming, here's this thing that's so helpful when we're having conversations. And we love to especially be able to name something that a student has done. Kaylee did this yesterday and it really helped us. So what we might call that is, and then here's how Kaylee and other people might do that. They might do something like this and, you know, having a little anchor chart so there's a visual reminder of that skill. So when we're having a conversation today, you could try. And that's basically a micro lesson just in a nutshell.
When I was doing these hands-down conversations and I had more space for myself to listen as a teacher, I'm like, well, look at those kids like slumped onto the ground, like pulling the carpet apart, but they're having like this amazing conversation. And so I learned that listening is a lot broader. So in this lesson that I'm thinking about, we just talk with kids about what are lots of different ways that listening can look like. Sometimes with younger kids, I'll take pictures of them listening in different ways and we'll notice things about them together. And then we invite them to talk with their Turning Talk partner about like, how do you like to be listened to? Or tell me about how you listen. And just kind of broaden that. And really, I like to think that like the micro lessons are for the kids, but also I'm saying those things to say them for myself. Like, remember, like you don't have to insist that kids are staring each other down in the eyes all the time. Like, it's okay when they're doing other things. There's other ways of listening. So I think I've learned as much from the micro lessons each time I do them as the kids that I'm trying to help grow as listeners and talkers as well.
You folks have a lot of really eloquent ideals you express around democratic classrooms and engagement, but you also have like just some very tangible, practical, even down to like how a teacher positions their body in space and the way they use their eyes to connect. I think it'd be really helpful for teachers to hear that it's not just they're signing on to a manifesto of sorts, but there's like ways they can act their way into the beliefs that you both expressed here.
When I'm starting hands-down conversation work, if I put myself a little bit outside of the circle and look down and give myself a clipboard, it helps me bite my tongue and it helps me give better wait time and see what the kids are doing before I have that tendency to jump in and teach and do lots of teachery things.
Kasia and Christy, thank you so much for joining us. We are so excited to have this conversation and to share your work. This is exciting, and I feel like this conversation is just the beginning of a deeper dive into this book.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you both.
Thanks so much for listening to our conversations with Fawn Nguyen and Christy Herman Thompson and Kasia Omohundro-Wiedekind, both of which were released in 2021, part of our second season. And, you know, we hope you enjoyed listening to it for a first, second, maybe third, fourth time.
Let's be real. There's some real fans out there.
We loved it then. We love it now.
Yep. Please keep in touch with the show by following us on Twitter at MTL Show and join our Facebook group, the Math Teacher Lounge community. We'd love to hear from you there. And please stay tuned for more info on what we're cooking up here in the Math Teacher Lounge. Thank you, folks, for listening. Take care, Bethany.
Bye now.
Don't miss Amplify's biggest math event yet. Join us March 12th, 2024 for our groundbreaking Math Symposium, a free virtual professional development event designed to give you all the tools you need to strengthen math instruction, elevate student agency, and build math proficiency for life. Learn more and register today at amplify.com/2024 Math Symposium.